But when I was in high school, I remember a really bad storm ravaged the southeastern Minnesota countryside. And if you've grown up in the Midwest, maybe really anywhere, you've probably experienced some sort of natural disaster wherever you've been, but I feel like it has followed my wife and I wherever we go, whether it's Minnesota or Georgia, or even here in Wisconsin. But when I was in high school, a storm ravaged the little town of Lewiston, Minnesota. That's where my mom grew up. It was a little rural town of maybe like 1,000 people. And that's where her parents, my grandparents, who are now deceased, it's where they lived. And when I was growing up, I was blessed to have several grandparents. And I just thought, everybody's got multiple sets of grandparents, you know? And what I mean by this is by this. My parents, on my dad's side, I had my grandmother. Grandfather was deceased actually when my dad was like 6 years old. So his father died when my dad was six. So I didn't know that grandpa, but I had Grandma Eleanor on that side. And then on my mom's side, I had two sets of grandparents because my grandparents divorced and they remarried a little later in life. So I just thought everybody has three sets of grandparents. It's just like how the world works, right? Well, it was interesting because I had Grandpa Bernie and Grandma Marie, and Grandpa Bernie and Grandma Mary. Their names were very similar, and they actually lived four houses apart from each other, okay? They're like on the same block. You could literally just walk right down the street, and their names were so similar. And the last names were very, very similar as well. So it was Grandma Mary and Bernie Hennessy, and Grandpa Bernie and Marie Kennedy. So it was like Kennedy and Hennessy and Marie and Mary and two Bernies. So I was just like, this is kind of strange now as an adult looking back, and they live four houses down from each other. But there was a storm one summer day when I was growing up, and the storm produced a tornado, and it touched down where my grandparents lived. Okay. We got a call from Grandma Marie and Grandpa Bernie. Their house was fine. There was just a little bit of damage to the garage. Thank God. They were okay. But when my mom tried to call her mother, Grandma Mary, and her husband Bernie, there was no response. There was no response. It was odd. The TV reports, we saw them coming in. Devastation. There were reported injuries. There were reported homes destroyed, farms upended and lost. And nobody was answering the phone, okay? This is before cell phones. We started to get worried. So my mom kept calling and calling and calling, seeing, please answer, because it was ringing. After about a dozen rings, somebody answered the phone. But it wasn't my grandma. It was my grandmother's neighbor. He was standing in the rubble of their home where the kitchen used to be, and the phone was somehow ringing. Somehow, some way, that landline was still able to set off rings. And the neighbor told us that my grandma and grandpa were nowhere to be found. So we assumed the worst. I still remember the look on my mom's face when she heard this. One house and one set of grandparents completely untouched. Four houses down, grandparents missing, home imploded. Everything, every memory of that house wiped off the face of the earth in an instant. Imagine losing everything you held dear in this life. In our scripture lesson from the Old Testament today, in Job, that's exactly what we hear. But we hear kind of the after that has already happened. Job loses everything. Everything that's important to Job. He loses his property, he loses his family, he loses his wealth, his body is injured. Everything's been taken from him. The story of Job in the Old Testament is a complicated one of unraveling. And it's one that at its core deals with human suffering and God's goodness. And how do these things work together? And how do bad things happen to good people? Why does this happen to Job? In our lesson, Job laments. He laments. what has happened to him. And he's looking back and trying to figure out, why did this happen? And ultimately, he discerns that God is the source of wisdom, and to turn away from evil is to turn toward the heart of the world, which God has inherently made good. But this is not to say that he doesn't unravel before he comes to this conclusion, and a heck of a lot more afterwards. So I want to tell you a little bit about Job, some backstory that we didn't have today, and how everything he has comes unraveled. And I'll be honest with you, I don't have a conclusion for this sermon. I don't have a conclusion because I don't know that there is one. But I think that it is a great way to lead us into Lent when we find ourselves journeying through the valley of darkness before we get to the cross, the tomb, and Easter Sunday. So, a little bit about Job. Job begins by telling us there once was a man named Job from the land of Uz. Sounds like Oz, doesn't it? Now, this is a way of storytelling in the Old Testament. You know, it's a type scene. It's kind of like saying long, long ago, in a land far, far away, there was a man named Job. It's supposed to catch your attention and tell you that this is, it's kind of a hypothetical story. Okay? We don't know where Uz is. We don't know where Uz is. But this is a story about this blameless and upright person in a land far, far away that actually could be anywhere. Okay? And we're supposed to be challenged by this story, I think, about human suffering and God's goodness. We hear that Job in the Hebrew was a Yasser Tam Cain. A Yasser Tam Cain. He was a straight and upright guy, a straightened arrow. Basically, it's like he's saying he was an Eagle Scout. Job was an Eagle Scout. Volunteered in the community. A good guy. If you grew up in the 90s and watched The Simpsons, Job was like Ned Flanders. Okay, he was like the ultimate God-fearing person. Job feared and feared God. He turned away from evil. He was an all-around good guy. Okay, and then we hear that Job had all kinds of material wealth on top of this, which in his day, and often in ours, we associate with blessing, right? We associate that with blessing. We oftentimes say, you know, if life is treating us well, I'm pretty blessed. And what do we mean by that translation? You know, I can eat, I've got a home, I have a vehicle, I've got a job, I'm blessed. That's material stuff. And that's really what Job is blessed in that way. Now, a couple days ago, I remember hearing an interview with Kobe Bryant, okay? After he was killed in this helicopter crash in California. In this interview, it was an old interview, someone was asking him if he would have more children, and he said that he and his wife had a wonderful life, a beautiful family, health, everything that came with fame and fortune. He said, we're very blessed. We're very blessed. That's what you think of when you think of blessing, and that's really what we have in this story today. We hear that Job has a big family, 7 sons, 3 daughters, thousands of sheep, camels and oxen and donkeys, servants, all kinds of stuff. He was the greatest of all people in the East. He has a good reputation, we hear. He was blameless. He was giving. He actually offered sacrifices and offerings in advance, okay? Advance, so that if his family did something wrong, all the bases would be covered. But he really is a Yasser Tam Cain, this straightened arrow guy, this Job of Uz, blessed beyond measure. But then we hear the divine beings have a wager that Job will not keep his faith if he loses everything that's held dear to him. Now, hold up. That's hard to hear. Job's doing everything he's supposed to, and God and the divine beings and this being called Hasatan, Satan, Hasatan means the adversary in Hebrew. They wager with God about Job's life. The stakes are raised and the divine beings get to work at messing with Job's life to see if he will flinch with his faith. It's really hard to hear. Job loses his property first, okay? And then Job loses his children, his family. Job loses his health. He's afflicted. Basically, the only thing Job has left after losing everything is his wife. And in a sense, in the story, it's made to, I think, really rub it in his face because she says to him, you know, Job, What did you do to bring this on us? Why don't you just curse God and die? And that's the one person that's left with him, is this person that's saying, you're a screw up. Just curse God and die. Even his friends think that he's done something wrong. They try to make sense out of what he did, pointing fingers at him. Surely you sinned in some sort of way. Surely you did something wrong. So say so, Job. Fess up. Come on, get it over with. But Job hadn't done anything wrong. Job didn't deserve what was happening to him. God and Hasatan were messing with him. In Job's story, his life has come unraveled in every way imaginable. And his search for answers to explain his suffering, that has come unraveled. His view about wealth and fame and health and a big family being associated with being a good, upright person, and that being a source of blessing, that has come unraveled. Here we have somebody that fears and serves God, and they are the subject of suffering that is unjust. That wasn't the way things were supposed to work, people believed. I think in our day, we think the same. You work hard, okay? You try hard, you follow all the rules, things are supposed to work out for you. Those are the stories we see on TV, on the Hallmark Channel. But that's not what happens to Job. Job's life totally sucks. It's bad. And this is where we are today, with Job trying to pick up the pieces, with Job trying to mend together this world of his that's been ripped apart. In our reading, as I shared earlier, he essentially comes to the conclusion that God's ways are not the ways of the world. But the world is, even after what he has experienced, good in some way because God created it. But ultimately, God's ways are God's ways. This way of Job raveling his life back together, I think, in some ways, is really weak. When you are in the midst of terrible suffering and your life has completely come unraveled and someone just says, it is what it is, that's a cold comfort. But that is the comfort that Job ultimately arrives at, in a sense. It's one conclusion he arrives at after his loss, trying to make sense out of what has happened. So what do we do, friends, when our lives are upended, when we have lost it all, like Job? There's a word, it's called a theosity. It basically has to do with human suffering and fate. You know, what theosity, what story do we tell ourselves about God's involvement in our loss or getting back on our feet? What do we do? What helps us through the darkest of valleys when everything in our lives come undone in a storm or a whirlwind or a fire or an earthquake or a flood or some sort of unimaginable loss? What helps us? What helps you, I wonder? So this week I was at Marquette for a 3-day summit with clergy. The ecumenical group, there's Catholics there are Lutherans in the group and Baptists in the group. I'm the one UCC pastor in the group. I had an interesting summit this time because we talked about human trafficking and migration and immigration. And I had the opportunity to hear the stories of several refugees that had to flee their country to seek asylum in the United States. And these stories were heartbreaking. They are of people who literally lost everything, their homes, their family members, their jobs, and any sort of security they had, their memories, their lives, everything that they had in their country of origin had to be left behind due to war or violence. What starting over in a faraway land looked like and how they made sense of what happened is what carried them through to being alive and flourishing here today. For some people, what it was that carried them through that ultimate loss, that Job loss, was the American dream. For some, it was their family, having the opportunity to secure a future for those that would come after them. For others, like Job, it was their faith that carried them through, thinking that there had to be some bigger picture to all of this. Now, if all that sounds too far removed from our world here in Bayview, these were our neighbors here in this community, like literally 5 minutes from here. Just yesterday, I experienced someone sharing a little bit about this as well, but in a different context. I was at my daughter's gymnastics class, and I sat next to a woman that was telling me a little bit about her life. And she shared with me that she had been traveling back and forth to the Twin Cities. I said, "Oh, I used to live in the cities." "Oh, why are you going there? I love the Twin Cities." She said, "I really don't want to go to the Twin Cities, but we have to go because her sister, at age 36, was going through stage 3 ovarian cancer. She had found out that she was having difficulties getting pregnant, and that was why. And the irony is that her sister works for the Make-A-Wish Foundation, dealing with people that have these illnesses and cancer, helping them feel some sort of sense of hope. But she wasn't feeling very much hope. For one, she was sick. For two, she couldn't have kids, and her life was up in the air. What was going to happen? Her sister was wrestling with what it means for a good person who devotes their life to battling cancer and illness, to themselves have their life unraveled by cancer and illness. Where is God in that? This woman asked me. She was shook, wasn't sure what to believe. All of this is to say is that Job's story is really not all that far away from ours. Job's story is really our story. When we wrestle with the question of God's goodness, when we wrestle with human suffering, every day when we turn on the TV, you know, or read in the newspaper, or online, we wrestle with the question of God's goodness and human suffering when we hear about the horror of a mom and her two young children being killed right here in Milwaukee, or of someone being taken advantage of for their kindness, or churches getting scammed by people, or folks emptying out their bank accounts for someone that isn't even really there. Or when we feel like God has outstretched God's hand against us in our health, our wealth, our family. It's right here. Job's story is ours. So my prayer for us is that if we find ourselves completely unraveled, that we can figure out a way to make sense of it. That we can be better spouses and partners than Job's wife was in the story. That we can be better friends and companions than the ones that Job had. And that we can arrive at some sort of satisfying answer for us that brings us comfort. Because what works for Job might not work for this woman at my daughter's gymnastics class. What works for this woman at my daughter's gymnastics class might not work for a grieving family here in Milwaukee, or the refugee, or the person that's lost all of the money in their bank account. In the weeks to come, as we venture into the season of Lent, and we witness how Jesus' story becomes unraveled, my prayer is that God gives us strength, that God walks with us on this 40-day journey, and that we are reminded the story doesn't end on the cross or in the tomb. But days later, may it be so.